evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 17, 2021. Another aid worker is killed in South Sudan's Unity State.
The late aid worker had a place for football, so he advised the other one to pay for the game. Actually, they are relatives. After he was told to go home and bring money, he went and picked up his Kalashnikov, and then when the guy wanted to go home, he came and attacked him.
And a senior South Sudan government official reacts to a decision by a Kenyan court to freeze his bank accounts.
And that account, I service it and send money to it from my bank account in the Cooperative Bank of South Sudan. I transfer money there whenever I can from my own source of money, which is legitimate, including my salary and any allowances I get.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Panjshir County of Unity State say another aid worker with the International Rescue Committee was killed on Tuesday. The commissioner of Panjshir County says the assailant is still at large, adding that county authorities are working to apprehend the culprits and bring them to justice. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone, Panjshir County Commissioner Colonel William Gadjek Mabor says a local aid worker with the IRC was on his way home when he was attacked and killed in Nyal. He says the aid worker owns a video hall in the area where he shows international football matches for a fee. He says a patron who did not have money to pay to watch one of the games shot the aid worker.
The late aid worker had a place for football, so he advised the other one to pay for the game. Actually, they are relatives. After he was told to go home and bring money, he went and picked up his Kalashnikov, and then when the guy wanted to go home, he came and attacked him. That's it.
Gadjek says the known assailant is still at large, but county authorities are expected to arrest him very soon. Carol Segewa, country director for the International Rescue Committee in South Sudan, says the repeated attacks on aid workers derails the delivery of humanitarian assistance to the needy.
It makes it very difficult for us to work when humanitarian workers are attacked and killed. Our initial analysis does not show that it was directly against the IRC, but still, he was our colleague and we all feel the pain of his loss. He was doing a lot in nutrition to help the people in Yam.
Last month, Dr. Louis Edward Saleh, an aid worker with the International Rescue Committee, was found dead in Ganyel Payam of Panjshir County, where he was serving in the only clinic in the area. A forensic report released by the government earlier this week indicates Dr. Saleh bled to death as a result of several cuts on his neck and stab wounds on his arms. The gruesome murder forced the International Rescue Committee to pull out from the area. Commissioner Gadjek says local residents of Ganyel are not only feeling the pain of the death of Dr. Saleh, but are suffering after humanitarian workers left the area.
They are dying every day. That is why I want NGOs to understand for their right to ask for their protection. Not because they don't have right to pull out. They have right, but I need them to ask for their protection and themselves, the innocent people. And Panjshir people, they are not wild animals. They are human beings.
Gadjek says two guards who were on duty the night Dr. Saleh died have been arrested and are cooperating with investigation. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomoro has also formed a committee at the national level to investigate the aid workers' killing and bring the perpetrators to justice. Dr. Saleh's killing and those of three other aid workers this year has sparked an uproar among health workers in South Sudan who are demanding an end to the persistent killing of humanitarian workers. Health workers had threatened to go on a strike, but later called off the strike for unclear reasons. For more than 30 years, the IRC has been one of the largest aid providers in South Sudan, delivering emergency assistance and supporting vulnerable populations in hard-to-reach areas. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
A senior South Sudan government official has denied any involvement in money laundering and criticized a recent court order by Kenya to freeze his bank accounts. Kenya's Assets Recovery Agency reported there are reasonable grounds to believe that funds held by Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lumuru in specified bank account are direct benefits, profits or proceeds obtained from complex money laundering activities. For VOA News, Onen Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
The Kenyan online news outlet The Star reported on Monday that Justice James Wakiaga of Kenya's High Court issued the order to freeze Lumuru's bank accounts at a Kenyan bank. According to The Star, a supporting affidavit shown by Isaac Nakatore, an investigative officer with Kenya's Assets Recovery Agency, stated Lumuru made suspicious cash transfers to a bank account in the name of Reja Kedi Ladu Kenyi. The Star reports Lumuru operated two bank accounts, including a Kenyan shillings account containing 13.42 million and a second dollar account. Lumuru denies any involvement in illicit transactions at a Kenyan bank.
I have an account in Kenya with the Cooperative Bank of Kenya, Cooperative House, which is intended to maintain my family in Nairobi. And that account, I service it and send money to it from my bank account in the Cooperative Bank of South Sudan. I transfer money there whenever I can from my own source of money, which is legitimate, including my salary and any allowances I get.
The minister said he did not receive an official bank letter informing him that his account was frozen for a specific reason. Lumuru says he had $460,000 in his dollar account, but was not aware of any pending court case against him. The U.S. Department of Treasury sanctioned Lumuru and former Defense Minister Kwol Manyang Jok of perpetuating South Sudan's conflict by obstructing the country's peace process. The sanctions included freezing any U.S. assets held by both officials and prohibited U.S. citizens from doing business with the two officials. Lumuru says Kenya is implementing sanctions against the government of South Sudan through the Kenya Assets Recovery Agency.
So if it is the one that is closing accounts of ministers of the government of South Sudan because of American sanctions, then it is implementing those American sanctions. That's one. Two, the court in Kenya is a kangaroo court. It is not a court of justice because there is no court that issues a ruling without the defendant, without investigation. So it freezes your account without giving the opportunity for you to defend yourself.
Lumuru is the second high-profile South Sudan government official whose assets are being questioned by foreign governments. In 2017, the Australian Federal Police confiscated a $1.5 million property at Nowra Warren, southeast of Melbourne, bought by the son of James Hothmai, the Minister of Labour in South Sudan, in Kiir administration. Lumuru insists the money in his accounts at a Kenyan bank are earnings from his personal investments in South Sudan.
This is not my first job in my life. I have been working for years. I have properties, some of which are rented. They are legal. They are here. If anybody wants to prove, you prove it. So all these political witch hunts that are being thrown against me, they are intended to tarnish my name, to fight me politically, to just destabilize me. But what they are getting is the opposite. And I want somebody, just one person, to open a case against me for stealing money. One. And then we'll see what happens to them. And this is not the first time. They've even done this in London. What did they get? Zero.
The Star reported preliminary analysis of the bank statement held in the name of the respondent does not demonstrate a consistent source of funds, which could reasonably be said to be salary, end quote. But Lumuru says he does not understand why the investigators did not contact him for any clarifications.
I bank with the Cooperative Bank. It's a very credible bank. The Cooperative Bank will not allow you to bank with them, will not accept your money unless you prove your source of income. Even my salary or allowances transferred from this ministry to my account, the Undersecretary must prove the reasons why this amount is being transferred. What is the budget? line and why the money is being transferred. So I'm confident that every transfer I've made was legitimate, and my bank is there to prove it.
Lumoru warns he will sue the High Court of Kenya and the Star in the East African Court of Justice for what he calls tarnishing his image. South Sudan's Vice President Taban Dengai, Information Minister Michael Makuei, and the Chief of the South Sudan People Defense Forces, General Santino Deng, have been sanctioned for their roles in obstructing peace in South Sudan. Other former South Sudanese officials and businessmen are also on the United Nations, European Union, and the U.S. Department of Treasury lists of sanctioned individuals for a variety of issues related to South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Khartoum, where some Sudanese environmental experts and activists are expressing concerns over the high speed at which part of the country is turning into desert. Some activists say Sudan continues to lose agricultural land, forests and natural resources due to desertification. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
As Sudan joined the rest of the world in commemorating the International Day to Combat Desertification today, some local environmental experts and activists are expressing concern over the speed at which Sudan's arable land is becoming arid. Sudan's arable land was reported at 10.7% in 2018, according to the World Bank Collection of Development Indicators compiled from officially recognized sources. Speaking at the national workshop organized by the National Council for Environment and Natural Resources in Khartoum on Wednesday, the Council Secretary General Rashid Meki Hassan emphasized the need to educate Sudanese about the importance of protecting the environment. He also called on various institutions to, in his words, assume their responsibility in preserving and protecting the environment. Speaking at the same workshop, Talaat Dafa'alla, a natural resources lecturer at the University of Bahri, said he worries about the level of desertification on the country's productive belt, saying it is causing a serious threat to agricultural activities in Sudan.
Desertification has reached a worrying and annoying state and threatens all agricultural lands, and we can regard this as the first national problem in Sudan. We need to seriously put all efforts together from Sudanese universities, research centers, voluntary associations, and government institutions.
Adil Muhammad Ali, a Sudanese environmental activist and a member of the Sudan's desertification combat team, says the country's environment is exposed to many risks such as logging, unguided grazing, and the expansion of the mechanized agriculture, which he says negatively affects the distribution of the ecosystem and people's livelihood. Ali says some families were forced to leave their land due to desertification.
Many villages have been covered in sand and many communities have migrated to other areas. The area most affected by desertification in Sudan is the productive belt that is located between latitude 10 and 18. And this is where most of the animal resources are found and most agricultural activities are based, in addition to gum arabic production.
Sudanese environmental activist Randa Hassan says the expansion of the desert into the green belt of Sudan has impacted farming activities, which in turn affects Sudan's economy. Hassan says citizens need to learn how to preserve the environment and maintain the planet.
If our country is not productive and doesn't have agriculture production, which is the main economic backbone for Sudan, this will definitely affect all the citizens and this will impact on the economy of the country.
Workshop participants stress that sustainability of peace is paramount to reducing the main causes of conflict over resources and meeting the basic needs of citizens. They called on concerned institutions and organizations to exert more effort to restore the land and the environment and to enact laws that sustain resources and achieve balanced development. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, activists and artists celebrate the African Child Day. That story is lined up after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to conserve your energy when it is very hot outside?
I drink lots of cold water because it relaxes me. So immediately I become dehydrated or I feel hot. I take in more cold water, yes, and it makes me okay.
Well, I live around the beach, so on a hot day, I just take a stroll on the shore wearing a light cloth so that I can feel the sea breeze around myself.
If it is hot, you have to make sure that you get somewhere where it is cool. You go and bathe. Those are normal things you have to do.
When I'm at my home, I undress. It is my home. I have a bedroom. My home is big. Why won't I undress?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. A Sudan peace activist who attended talks in South Sudan's capital Juba between the Sudan's transitional government and the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North, led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu, says the differences between the two sides are so wide that it would take pressure from either the United States or the European Union for the two sides to find a common ground. Mohammed Salih says the main point of contention is the separation of religion from the state. The SPLM North, led by Al-Hilu, prefers separation of religion from the state. Salih says while the South Sudan government is doing a good job in facilitating the talks, some pressure is needed from a non-South Sudanese so that the two sides could reach an agreement.
I think they agree of 90% from the problems, and there is a 20% from issues. They don't agree in it because this is very difficult issues. I think the transition government need more time to make a decision because these issues is very difficult and complicated for them. And that is the reason why this dialogue is moved on to last Monday.
You said they agreed on 90% of the issues. What are some of the issues that make up the 10%?
The first issues is secularism and how we rule the country in the future. That is the first and the difficult issues because the transaction government cannot make a decision in this issue. The second issue is the military issue. There's a lot of military groups, and they must be a one in Sudanese government. These two issues, in my opinion, is the biggest two issues in making the agreement very difficult.
The issue of the military, why is this a difficult one?
It is difficult because there is many militaries, if the name is so right. The government military, there is a Janjaweed, named Tamseria. Yes, there is every group from the rebellion have their own military. And this all must be in the end of the transaction period, a one military. And that is very difficult. Here is very complicated issues to discuss, to make a decision, and that is not easy to make it from the transactions government side.
We know that Al-Hilu, the leader of the SPLM North, had been concerned about the issue of religion. Was that resolved?
No, not resolved. The secularism of the country, of the state, is the big issue. They don't make here any agreement. I think a lot of talking will be followed in this issue because two, three groups from the transactions government, they don't want to separate religion from the country, and that is a problem, yes, now.
But Al-Hilu, he wants the separation of religion and government. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Mohammed, what do you think? What is your own observation as someone who came to the talks to observe? What do you come up with? Do you think there is a possibility some agreement will be reached?
I think not yet. It will take more time till they reach an agreement. I think it is difficult now in this two very far position. between Al-Hilal and between the government. It needs more pressure from Western society and the government to see they must make more possibility in the issue of religion, in the issue of military. These two issues will be not solved without pressure from USA and from the European Union. The South Sudanese government, they're doing very well, but it is not enough. It needed engagement from America and from European Union to make as soon as possible an agreement.
That's Mohamed Saleh, a Vienna-based Sudanese peace activist. He was speaking with my colleague James Batty from the capital, Juba. Still in Juba, activists and artists are commemorating the International Day of the African Child by unveiling mural to mark the day. The painting portrays a picture of children offering a dove to a soldier exhausted by war as a sign of peace. For VOA News, David Monodanga has more from Juba.
The Anataban group of artists, cartoonists, and musicians painted and unveiled the children's mural on the grounds of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan to celebrate the South Sudan child. Deng Forbes, the artist who created the mural and project manager of LAM, a national NGO based in Juba, says he was inspired to feature the aspect of violence through children and education, since most people are tired of war. Forbes says he wants to see a peaceful South Sudan where children have access to education without discrimination and grow up without tribalism.
If we have children that are suffering, then we're basically just living for no future. But if we provide a peaceful environment for the kids, then there is a beautiful future ahead. So these children are inspiring the soldier to put down the gun, take the dove, and accept peace.
Forbes says his childhood was characterized by experiences of war, starvation, and hearing gunshots during a series of conflicts. He says today's children are experiencing the same thing, but he hopes that will change and South Sudan will become a prosperous country. A 15-year-old child from the Juba Orphanage Center, whom we are identifying only as Emmanuel to protect his privacy, says all he yearns for is a peaceful South Sudan and access to quality education.
I want good schools, and there should be peace as well. If there's peace, we can stay at home happily and feel good. We can live and stay in peace and happy. But without peace, there will be no good schools.
Flora Lukudulachi works for the national NGO, Organization for Nonviolence and Development. She says the situation of South Sudanese children is getting worse each day, but no one seems to be paying attention to the problem.
We have a big number of growing street children and also the gang groups, which is also another alarm. These groups alone is causing a lot of insecurity. So as we celebrate this day today, it's like we are asking the government, what priority do they have really for those kids?
Phil Diamond, cultural affairs officer at the U.S. Embassy in Juba, says when he thinks of the future of South Sudan, he envisions a better education system and a peaceful country.
Everyone in South Sudan to look at each other first and foremost as South Sudanese, not as members of different tribes or from different states. And that's, in essence, what we're all working toward here.
Johnny Baxter, the UK's ambassador to South Sudan, says it is important for the British government to support the education sector in South Sudan, but says that can only be successful if the peace agreement is implemented to stop the ongoing conflict in the country.
The other side of the experience in South Sudan is obviously the violence that South Sudan has experienced over many years, and it is always tragic to see how this affects children, either children being drawn directly into conflict or children having their schools, their houses, their livelihoods destroyed or affected. And it is really important that we see progress on the peace agreement.
Baxter says he is pleased to see that International African Child Day is celebrated in South Sudan through creativity, art, and things that give children a chance to have some fun. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. We now leave you with the song Kuliom Dushman by Emmanuel Kembe. We've been listening to Emmanuel Kembe with the song Kuliom Dushman. I'm John Tanza. Thank you for allowing us into your homes, phones and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.